from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next up on Forum, an hour all about this year's Oscars. We'll recap last night's 86th Academy Awards ceremony and who won and who was snubbed. 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture, and the British-American 3D science fiction thriller and space drama film Gravity emerged with 7 Oscars. Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto received Oscars for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor for their performances in the Dallas Buyers Club, while Cate Blanchett won Best Actress for her performance in Blue Jasmine, and Lupita Nyong'o won Best Supporting Actress for her role in 12 Years a Slave. In the hour ahead, we turn our attention to the Academy Awards. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. In this hour, it's going to be an hour all about the Oscars. Did you see the Oscars last night, or did you read about them this morning? And if so, what are your sentiments about who won and who didn't win? And what do the Oscars mean? And are they as important to you as perhaps they are to some people who continue to obsess about them and build red carpets in their own homes? Who knows what? We've got a whole panel with us. Tim Gray is awards editor of Variety Magazine. He joins us this morning from Los Angeles. Tim, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We also have Mick LaSalle, film critic and columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, author of The Beauty of the Real, What Hollywood Can Learn from Contemporary French Actresses, which we discussed with him on Forum. And Mick, always good to have you. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Cyril Wood is also with us this morning in studio, freelance arts journalist and film critic, also a member of the San Francisco Film Critics Circle, and she contributes film criticism to a variety of publications, Hollywood Reporter, San Francisco Arts Monthly, and San Jose Mercury News, and good to have you with us again.
Good to be here.
Tim Gray, I want to begin with you because I want to talk a little bit about promotion of these Oscars. We never had more calls. We had the last time you were on, Leo DiCaprio was on, and David Russell wanted to get on, and Lee Daniels. Never had so many studios calling us and so forth, because there are a lot of people who listen to us who vote in the Oscars, obviously. But was this promotion heavier than it's ever been in the past? It seemed that way.
Yeah, I mean, I've been at Variety since 1981, and I don't ever remember a year like this. I think it's partly because there were a lot of good films this year, and there were no clear front runners. I mean, some years there's a movie like Titanic or something, and it's like everybody's saying, okay, that's going to win. But this year, there was a lot of suspense in a lot of the races, but I mean, it was intense. It was crazy. People were really pushing hard. So, yeah, it's interesting to hear that. And also, to your point, I mean, one of the things that the Oscar strategists have gotten very smart about is what the Democrats talked about in 2012 is finding these demographic groups, you know, and like the Democrats targeted Hispanic voters. I mean, a lot of the award strategists, it's like, okay, Bay Area, that's a key voting place, and they're stepping up their promotions there. I'm just warning you.
Well, it's okay. I think we've gone on recognition of that. Well, you know, Mick LaSalle, I saw in this morning's Chronicle, David Wegan, who is featured here often on KQED, talking about entertainment, said not too much was unpredictable. Agree?
Yeah. I think, best actor was pretty sure. Best actress was pretty sure. Best director was even pretty sure. So yeah, I mean, I thought a lot of the suspense. The real suspense was in Best Picture, which of course is the biggest. But even then, it was a suspense between two movies. So yeah, it was. And I think that affected the show, because then it became, more boring than usual.
Well, we're going to talk about the show. We'll do that with Sir in a minute, but because it was pretty boring, I'm afraid. But there was a surprise when Spike Jonze got Best Screenplay, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a surprise. But it was a surprise usually because the movie that wins Best Screenplay is very often the best movie, and they figured out a way to give it something that's not important. And I don't feel that way about her. I'm surprised, because to me, her is a single idea, and then once you get the idea, then you just spin it out from there, whereas a movie like American Hustle is so intricate, I thought that for sure would win.
And what about your overall take on winners, in terms of what was deserved or not deserved?
I think everybody who won it deserved it. It doesn't mean that they deserve it over other people, but at least everybody who won, you know, is a plausible winner. I mean, last year I thought that Argo winning was didn't make any sense considering the year in movies. And I thought, you know, Jennifer Lawrence winning for Silver Linings Playbook didn't make sense. These winners all make sense, whether you like, you know, like them the best. You know, not everybody's going to be pleased. I'm not entirely pleased, except that I don't really care one way or the other, to be honest. But I'm, you know, I these wouldn't necessarily be my choices. But I think good. You know, it's a good, plausible list. It's decent and reflective of the year that we just had.
Well, I like to look at sort of deconstructive things that come through, and I wonder if I'm onto something here, just from your perspective, about the fact that American Hustle and the Leonardo DiCaprio movie Wolf of Wall Street won no Oscars. I mean, is there maybe kind of a reaction against con man movies or something along those lines, or is that just maybe because it was deservingly so that they didn't get any Oscars?
No, I don't think it was deservingly so that they didn't get any Oscars. I think that, well, I think two things. I think those movies are they appeal to the same kind of people, same sensibility, so they cancel each other out. That's one thing. DiCaprio, though, wasn't going to win. I know that he really wanted to win. He really tried to win, and I would have voted for him, but the kind of role that he was in never wins Oscars because he's basically playing a kind of a grand elaboration of the kind of thing that he usually plays, and that never wins. Whereas like chameleonic transformation, somebody loses 40 pounds, somebody, you know, that kind of thing, that's the kind of thing that wins throughout history. Now, historically, the movies that are more highly regarded 50 years later are the movies when people are playing a kind of grand elaboration of the kind of thing they usually do. But in the moment, the other kind of movie wins. And I saw this coming, and I saw him, you know, really trying to win. I thought, this guy doesn't have a chance. I mean, he's going totally into, you know, into a historical headwind.
Could you say something, Sir Wood, about maybe the sympathy with films portraying gays and films portraying racial problems? I mean, they certainly rose to the fore this year.
Well, I think 12 Years a Slave was sort of the anointed important film of the year, and it's the kind of film that does appeal to the Academy an awful lot. Wouldn't have been
also a film that's very hard to watch, by the way.
Very hard to
watch.
The
LA Times had a whole piece about how it wasn't doing box office. This will give it a spike because people felt they'd seen a lot of these things before and they didn't want to experience them again. It's tough.
Yeah, also, too, with that film, I felt that it didn't I just didn't think that it opened things up and gave you a dimension. I mean, it's not an important problem. It made you sit through and watch it and think about it. But there was something really crucial missing in that storytelling. Even though Given was a, you know, great story that it was based on, there was just, you know.
It was a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great story. But I don't think, I mean, I think that McQueen's a good visual director. I still don't think he's a great storyteller on film yet.
We'll talk with you also about the actual Academy Award ceremony, and we'll hear from others. And, you know, there's always going to be Monday morning quarterbacking. I think it was the LA Times that said they've gone from naughty last year in terms of the host to nice with Ellen DeGeneres. But also a lot of people are saying it was dull. I mean, she wasn't that funny. And I didn't know what that whole pizza thing was about. I'm still trying to figure that out.
I don't think she didn't seem to have a lot of presence. But, you know, you were asking earlier about the gay content in films. I think it was interesting that last year we were talking about the choice of Seth MacFarlane and that he was edgy and they were pandering to try to get a younger demographic to watch the show. But here, Ellen DeGeneres, an out gay woman, is the middle of the road choice. You know, whatever that says, I mean, it seems like there's been a sea change in at least in American television thinking that shows. I do think it was boring. There were 30 minutes easily that could have come out of it. And a lot of the stuff in the audience just didn't work, I thought. I mean, I guess the selfie, the selfie heard or seen around the world on Twitter seemed to have some resonance. But I was very bored with it.
One funny line about the Dallas Buyers Club being a movie that pointed out that one shouldn't have sex at rodeos. It was a good line. But other than that, I didn't find it all that funny. I wonder about Matthew McConaughey. He's been criticized a good deal for not mentioning anything about AIDS or HIV and the character he played. He talked mostly about God and himself, actually.
Yeah, I think he likes to talk about himself and hear. He really loves the sound of his own voice, that actor. I thought it was interesting, too, and I'm curious what the other guests think about this, that, yes, he did lose a lot of weight, but I thought it was really a weak film. Though everything else around that performance was weak. I didn't think it was a good screenplay. I didn't think it was shot well. well, and yet he walked away with the Oscar.
Tim Gray, what do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, there's something indefinable where it's like it was his year, and there was just a buzz around him and his performance. Now, the truth of it is they've been trying for 20 years to get that film made, and at one point they were going to make it with Woody Harrelson, who I think would have been very good in it. It was going to be made with Ryan Gosling. I think he would have been good in it. So I agree. I thought Matthew McConaughey was very good in it, and people love he lost 40 pounds. They like that kind of flashy stuff, but, I mean, like Mr. LaSalle, I think I probably would have voted for Leonardo DiCaprio.
But that speech with Charlie McLaughlin, I mean, you know, I wonder where he was coming from, making himself as a hero and so forth. Compare that speech to Jared Leto's speech, which had such class to it. And
well,
grace.
Exactly. But she just said he loves the sound of his own voice. I mean, I went to the Spirit Awards, which recognizes independent films, because this was a little low-budget movie. It was like $5 million movie. And I timed his speech. It was 6 minutes. And he loves to talk about himself. And you do think, but that would have been a great opportunity to say something, meaningful. I guess he did think he was saying something meaningful, but.
But he's a narcissist, so he was talking about the most meaningful subject to him.
Yeah, Mick, you want to weigh in here? Mick LaSalle?
Well, I just assume that they're all narcissists, and not only that, but they all sort of have a reason to be narcissistic, because when you have the whole world just talking about how much they love you, and they love you, and they love you, and everybody smiling when you walk in the room, it's going to have an effect on people. So in a way, I sort of prefer the kind of innocent, unconscious narcissism of Matthew McConaughey to, like, the more calculated, hidden narcissism of everybody else. So it doesn't bother me, because I just accept it. And also, too, I expect from him something crazy. In fact, you know, when I wrote the article for today's paper, these things are written in advance, and I was writing it in the morning, and I was already writing about he said something crazy about, I wrote it like 4 hours before the ceremony. I said he said something crazy, and I wrote just a dash, because I knew he was going to just do something nuts. This is just the guy. I kind of like the way he is. It's just I wouldn't change him, and I know he wouldn't change himself, that's for sure.
Well, Sarah Wood, when you were last on with us, we were talking about the whole flap that went on with Woody Allen. It didn't seem to affect Cate Blanchett's receiving the award, and she acknowledged, his brilliant script writing and all those kinds of laudatory things.
Well, I mean, there's just this really operatic family situation that Woody Allen is going through, and it's the kind of thing you can just never get to the bottom of it. All you have to do is say it, you know, is make an accusation like that, and it sticks, and I'm not getting into the veracity of what his adopted daughter who made these accusations
Yes.
about him. But there was this whole kind of smearing by association about the, if you read that letter in the Times, of actresses who worked with him, which seemed to me unfair. And I think she's been pretty classy. She kind of did an off-the-cuff response. I think it was at the Santa Barbara Film Festival.
Although for the Language Police, she made a kind of serious faux pas when she said, "My honor is even exacerbated by Daniel Day-Lewis giving me the award."
Yeah.
It wasn't one of the E words. It was enhanced.
It was enhanced, I think she was looking for, right, to our yeah. Although, I guess, Tim Gray, one of the – talk about faux pas. I mean, what was with John Travolta and
You know, I mean, half of me thinks, okay, we've all had our moments when you forget something. But I do think, wait, if you're going to be on the Oscars, seen by like 800 million people, and you have one name to introduce, I mean, that's all he didn't have a long list of people. He had one person, and it is hilarious. I mean, that thing is like on Twitter, it's on YouTube, and I watched it like 5 times last night. It just makes me laugh every time, because it's like I don't even know what he's talking about. So I don't know what happened there, but it was kind of bizarre and kind of funny.
You know what one of the biggest surprises was? That there was no Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I kept waiting for, because they always make such a fuss out of him. He's right there in the front row. I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was at a Lakers game or something. But
maybe he's retiring from doing award shows. Michael, can I say just one other thing about the Woody Allen flap? I think that it's really a mistake to conflate biography and art. I think it's a dangerous road to go down. I think there's a lot of art hanging in museums that we'd have to remove if we looked at the behavior of the artist. I'm thinking Picasso, you know, kind of a pig where women were concerned, that it's
can't
risky.
Listen to Wagner, can't read T.S. Eliot or Ezra Pound. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Right. Well said. But what about Best Foreign Film? Can I get you on that, Miklasow?
Best Foreign Film.
The Great Beauty won.
The Great Beauty. Well, that's considering what was nominated and considering the popularity of The Great Beauty, I thought that was okay. I mean, the best foreign film of the year was Blue is the Warmest Color, mm-hmm. but it was released 9 days too late in France to qualify. Actually, it could be nominated next year. And then the big surprise was The Past from Iran, but actually it's a French movie, but it's by an Iranian director. That wasn't even nominated. So those were the two great foreign films. They weren't nominated. Of what was nominated, The Great Beauty is okay. It's nice, you know, it's nice to see Italy, Italian cinema acknowledged and also coming into some kind of significance again.
Nice to see someone trying to imitate Fellini. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was three quarters of a great movie. And then the last quarter, it just didn't go to the next step, that kind of intangible thing that just didn't happen. But I also thought it was good to see a movie about an Italian Herb Cain, because that's really what he was.
Yeah. And actually, Tim Gray, I want to get you on record about just what you thought about the whole ceremony trying to build itself around heroes. I wasn't sure what it was trying. In fact, I noticed that one of the writers, I was looking at the credits, was Kristen Gore, the daughter of Al Gore. I think that's the same Kristen Gore. I don't know what role that plays, if any, but what about that whole sense of trying to bring something to bear on the idea of heroes? What was that all about?
Well, seriously, when they announced that, you know, the theme this year is going to be heroes, I think, what difference does it make? To me, it's like having a theme for your prom or the theme for the Rose Parade. You know, the theme for the Rose Parade is always triumph over adversity, and then there's a float of Smokey the Bear or something. You think, I don't even know what we're talking about here. But again, it was just like these kind of token film clips. I've written columns, which they always ignore, saying you got to overhaul the whole program because they came up with this format in 1953, you know, and that was like a big novelty in the early days of TV to have a ceremony in this one theater and have a bunch of cameras there and you get to see the stars being themselves. Well, you know, in 2014, there's no novelty there. And it's I kept saying, look, send Louis C.K. overseas talking to people at a multiplex about what's your image of life in America based on the movies that you see.
Oh, come on. They sent Jimmy Fallon inside of a window. I mean, you know, that was supposed to be novelty or cutting edge. It wasn't even funny. What was it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, somebody said to me last night after the award ceremony, we just did the show in general, he said, I felt like I was watching, like, age-old rituals being interrupted by casual daytime talk show conversations, or maybe it was casual conversations being interrupted by rituals, because he said there'd be the presenter and the envelope and here's the film clip and blah, blah, blah. And then Ellen DeGeneres is going into the audience and taking selfies and ordering pizza. And that's the kind of stuff she does on her talk show. But it did seem like a very odd mix for Oscar.
Well, Tim, you mentioned the film clips. I read the article you did on film clips and you were discussing some novel film clips that should be used instead of the ones that you predicted. And many of those indeed were the ones used. What did you think overall of the clips they used?
Well, listen, they used some of the ones I suggested, and I would love to believe it was my influence, but I don't think it was. But a lot of times with film clips, it's like the filmmakers and the studio do it, and it's kind of contractual. It's like, okay, here's a scene with the four actors in it, and so, you know, we'll make everybody happy. But sometimes that scene with the four actors, it's totally out of context. I mean, the clip for Captain Phillips that they were using at a lot of award shows was right at the end, Tom Hanks going through that physical exam, which when you see the film, it's an amazing, it's very, very powerful because of everything that's gone before it. But out of context, just a one-minute film clip of a doctor, talking to him, it's like, what is this movie about? And so, again, I think they loved that scene. They wanted to make Tom Hanks happy, and probably the director loved that scene, but it's like, yeah, but this isn't really telling people what the movie's about. So I thought the film clips that they chose were at least closer to what they're doing. But you know, I kind of think one of the Oscar goals is to get people to want to see these movies, to get them to go see 12 Years a Slave, but also just to go back to movie going, because, you know, people have so many options these days in terms of video games and social networking and stuff like that. Movie going is not a habit, so it's like it should encourage them to do that. And I think, I don't know, a song tribute to Wizard of Oz and a 40-second film clip, I don't know if that's going to do it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, about that Wizard of Oz tribute, but before I do that, Mick LaSalle, I want to get your take on the what I thought would be a much more major tribute to Philip Seymour Hoffman, but it was probably one of the classier things. I mean, they just saved him for last.
Yeah, well, that's about all they could do. Usually what they do is they leave the mics on in the auditorium, and they save the person that they think everybody is saddest about last, and then you hear everybody clapping. But I didn't expect much. By the way,
it's a nice shout out to Harold Ramis, didn't you think, by Bill Murray?
Yeah, that was. I was puzzled by the Wizard of Oz thing. I know it's the 75th anniversary, but it's not exactly that film is unknown, or that having Judy Garland's children there has any kind of effect, or anybody cares. I just thought that was strange.
It was gratuitous. I liked Pink's rendering of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I thought it was terrific, by the way. I think she knocked it out of the park. But it was bizarre, Sarah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And it's interesting because, again, I think they were trying to skew younger, to speak to Tim's point about trying to get people to actually go out and see the movies, which I think would be more aimed at a younger audience. This show really seemed like your granddad's awards show. I mean, even Bette Midler, that was an extremely strange moment for me. I just couldn't understand what she was doing or even why she was there for all. It took me a little while to figure it out. But all of this and the sentiment, I mean, there's always the sentimental aspect of the show, absolutely. But boy, it really seemed like they were aiming older. And they do think about these things when they produce these shows. So I found that odd. Maybe they've given up. Do you think they've given up on the younger crowd?
Well, they tried, you remember, with Anne Hathaway. And,
yeah.
What's the name? I'm going blank on it.
James Franco.
Yeah, James Franco. I'm looking at actually some emails here. Leslie writes, what do the critics think of Ellen DeGeneres' opening comment about there being two scenarios? One is that 12 Years a Slave would win Best Picture, and the other is that you're all racist. Did that calculation figure into things?
Clumsy, right?
It was actually another good line.
I thought it was a good line. I mean, the thing is, the funny thing is about the Academy, the Best Picture choices, if you look at it, they're very often a little bit political and a little bit, I guess if you're going to say conservative or liberal, they'd be liberal, but they're always endorsing sentiments that nobody could disagree with. So that, like, Crash, which is like saying racism is bad, beats Brokeback Mountain, which is basically about gay marriage, and this time the sentiment is that slavery is bad, and everybody's, you know, patting themselves on the back for being so daring. I mean, the thing is, daring is the way it was done. It was horrible, but it's not exactly a sentiment that, you know, the movie's not exactly expressing a controversial position.
It reminds me of a line of Sheila Benson's that I always cherished when she was talking about the movie Gandhi with Ben Kingsley, and she said, there were the three things in that movie that everyone in Hollywood wants to be: thin, tan, and moral. I'm going to open up the phone lines. If you saw the Academy Awards, if you have some thoughts, some reactions to what you've heard thus far, if you want to talk about who won, who didn't win, or for that matter, just the ceremony and the event itself, we want to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls, so feel free to join us. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and, of course, you can go to our Facebook page. Lots of ways to communicate with us. Let us know what you thought about last night's Oscars or what you thought about winners, losers, who was snubbed, who deserved what, the speeches that were made. Lots, obviously, to discuss. Sarah Wood here with us in studio, Mick LaSalle with us by phone, and Tim Gray with us from Los Angeles. And you, when we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. We are talking this hour about the 86th Academy Awards ceremony, which occurred last night. I'm Michael Krasny, our guest this hour. Sarah Wood here in studio, freelance arts journalist and film critic, and Mick LaSalle with us by phone, film critic and columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. who has a book out called The Beauty of the Real, What Hollywood Can Learn from Contemporary French Actresses. And Tim Gray is also with us, awards editor for Variety magazine. He's in L.A. And I'm going to go to some of your comments here. A lot of comments coming in, and you can also be heard by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, if you have some responses to the Oscars or questions or comments in general. And you can also go online, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Frank writes online, without Ricky Gervais, there's no reason to watch any awards ceremony. Mara Lee writes, biggest disappointment in the Oscars this year was the lack of even a nomination for Fruitvale Station. We still have a long way to go in the conversation about race in this country. It's ironic that 12 Years a Slave has apparently finally begun our needed national conversation, but its subject is the root of the issue presented in Fruitvale Station, and the lack of recognition for Fruitvale Station just proves how much farther we still need to go. Well, along that line, you know, the fact is, Tim Gray, that 20 Feet from Stardom won, and it was a terrific movie, but some felt that Act of Killing should have won and for Best Documentary, but maybe it was a little bit too much of a political hot potato.
Well, it was. I loved The Act of Killing. I mean, our reviewer, Peter DeBruce, said this is a movie that if you see it, you will never forget it, but you will never want to watch it a second time, which to me kind of sums it up, because for people who haven't seen it, it's about there was a mass genocide, 65-66, in Indonesia, and the people who perpetrated that are still in power, and the documentary guy interviewed them, and they talk about it, and they wanted to reenact some of this. He talked to them so long, this went on for several years, they started reenacting some of the murders that they did in the style of different movies, because they said they love movies, they learned a lot about violence from movies, so they do their killings in the style of a gangster film, and in one case in the style of a musical. It's like, it's surreal to an unbelievable level, and it's very, very troubling. And I mean, the 20 Feet from Stardom is a terrific film. It's much easier to take because it's about singers, backup singers, and studio singers, you know, who are 20 feet from stardom but never quite stars themselves. And you know, if you're sitting at home with a bunch of screeners, you think, do I want to watch a bunch of murders in Indonesia, or do I want to watch Darlene Love and some backup singers? So it's much easier to take, but it has substance, the film. But again, the whole thing that I love and get frustrated with about the Oscars is judging best, because you know, with Olympics, you know, somebody's either the highest jumper or they're not. You know, they either broke the speed record or they didn't. But with best, it's like, I don't know what's best. They're all good.
Well, it's often ludicrous, I mean, to try to say what's best when you have such outstanding. Well, what about, Mick, I want to get your take on that. What about this kind of dichotomy between maybe a, and Darlene Love was wonderful, of course, and I love that movie, 20 Feet from Stardom, but, you know, it's not the politically kind of impact film that the other one is.
Well, I think
Act of Killing.
I think that people just didn't watch Act of Killing, because what happens is you have a choice of all these movies, and you eventually, ultimately, you don't see all of them. And if you've seen 20 Feet from Stardom and you say, oh, that's good, okay, I'm going to vote for that, then you don't really think, oh, well, I'm going to see something that's going to be better than that. And so that's what happened. I think if you took a real poll of people who saw both movies, that The Act of Killing would definitely win. But I think everybody watched 20 Feet from Stardom, and you know, not too many people watched The Act of Killing, because it's rough. It's just rough going.
Is 12 Years a Slave.
I think 12 Years a Slave is too rough going, because it's not just rough going because it, you know, slavery is bad and it's hard to see. I think there's something in the filmmaking that's a little bit off. I don't think it's as great a movie as people are saying, although I think it's a very, very good movie.
Brings up another question. I want to get our callers involved in this, but Sir Wood and I were talking off air about the misnomers that are often given. For example, Steve McQueen has been named as the first African-American to win an Oscar. First of all, he's British to begin with. But secondly, he didn't win an Oscar for directing. The film won an Oscar, sir.
That's right.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know that that's true. But also with, Cuarón, I think, isn't he the first Mexican to, Latino to win for best director? So there were some firsts in that category, too. And it is interesting that it kind of took a British director to make this movie about a very American, you know, tragic kind of horrific chapter in American history that nobody wants to talk about.
Was he due to, in part, because Shame and those movies were thought to be really pretty well done, the other two previous movies?
I thought they had a similar problem. I just don't think he is a really good storyteller. There's just there's something missing there. And he's a visual artist, and that's his strength. And he does get good actors to work with him. But, man, he pounds you over the head, and he doesn't give you kind of – I even think that in 12 Years a Slave – and I know it's a little bit of heresy to say this. I think that I found it hard to get into that the main character about what he was, you know, to really get insight into him.
Well, somebody said to me, you notice that all of the Southern whites were diabolical and sadistic, and the only nice white figure was Brad Pitt, who was a Canadian.
And a producer.
Right.
Right. The producer helped get that film made.
Okay. Yeah. And the producer, yeah. Well, yeah. I'm reading some more comments here online. Earl writes, Ellen established herself as a strong presence early on, but her later bits, popping up in open seats and painfully labored pizza routine, turned her from an MC into an annoying extra. I wonder what they did with that money they got from Harvey Weinstein and the others, by the way. They actually pay for the pizza, you think? Here's Frank, who writes, 12 Years a Slave was one of my favorite films of the year and compelled me to take a course, hate that name, called History of the Slave South. Much of what is depicted in the film parallels stories of modern-day slavery that occur in places like Turkey and, yes, even here in the U.S., in places like Las Vegas. Elaine writes on Facebook, I truly appreciated and respected the acceptance speeches given by the winners of the Best Supporting Actor and Actress. They rocked it. They set the bar. Robert says, okay, lighten up, people. It's a silly award show every year that means a lot to very few people. More entertainment. I enjoyed the silly pizza thing. I expected more on Philip Seymour Hoffman than the memorial brief, unless I missed something. You didn't. Carla writes, my favorite moments, Angelina Jolie with Sidney Poitier. Matthew McConaughey was so sincere. I appreciate his love of God and family. Lupita Nyong'o spoke so eloquently and thanked everyone who made a difference in her life. She even spoke to our youth. Your dreams are valid, simply beautiful, inside and out. Just read a few more comments here. Sandy emails, I have never understood why the majority of the United States set aside their entire evening to pay homage to people they can never relate to. To me, it's just a parade of multi-million dollar actors and actresses wearing multi-thousand dollar outfits. Tony writes, oh my gee, Michael Krasny dissing the Oscars. I thought they were great. Can't the stars be human? Was I dissing? Okay. Art Robinson writes, Ellen rocked, especially since she broke Twitter with her Meryl Streep and other selfie tweet. And Andres writes, where can one watch the complete short films that were nominated for the Oscar? That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Mick?
I don't know. I have no idea. Where you could see the short films?
That's what he wants to know, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, maybe somebody knows and could let us know. We'll try to find out. And Alan writes on Facebook, not since Little Bomb Disposal movie beat out Avatar has there been such a travesty as Gravity not winning Best Film. We're going to go to more and find out what you think. Our callers, Leslie, morning.
Hi, I just wanted to say I was saddened during the memorandum piece that there wasn't more of a tribute to Shirley Temple. I mean, she was, you know, more than Philip Seymour Hoffman. She was such an icon for generations. She had a huge effect on me. I'm in my 50s. And, you know, I just, you know, it was kind of strange having that juxtaposition with Judy Garland.
Well, I don't want to sound cynical. Tribute. She was a Republican. I don't know if that colored anything. Tim Gray, you have the inside of these things. I mean, Shirley Temple certainly deserved maybe a tribute unto herself. Judy Garland versus Shirley Temple? I mean, what was the thinking maybe?
Well, I think they go a lot by habit. You know, and the In Memoriam segment is always like 2 minutes long. But again, I think they present 24 awards in like 3.5 hours, whereas the Grammys will present 10 awards and spend the rest of the time like entertaining people. So I think I think the Oscar people should do that again, and then they could give a little more time to people like Shirley Temple, because you're right. I mean, she saved 20th Century Fox. I mean, she was a phenomenon that people don't even imagine the extent of it. I mean, Fox at that point had like 10 writers on staff just to come up with scripts for Shirley Temple. I mean, that was their full-time job. She was like amazing. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, because he was involved in a lot of projects, so he affected business. When he died, it affected a lot of projects, a lot of business. Shirley Temple's death didn't affect that, but I agree. It's like give each of them a couple of minutes of tribute and you know, spend less time on pizza and all that kind of. I just think that the show should be
entertaining, and it's a little bit that they're following the format of 1953.
When you talk about Hoffman being a moneymaker, you have any inside dope as to what they're going to do with the Hunger Games? Because he had a central role in that, and they were in the process of making another Hunger Games film.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do about that. I mean, I don't know if they're going to replace him for the last one or just use the footage that they got. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to replace him. But isn't it? They have one finished, right? And then they've one. He had only a week shooting left on the other one.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
He did look very ill in Catching Fire. I mean, I actually noticed it. He did not look well.
No, he wasn't. Yeah. And we get another caller on. David, good morning.
Yes. Hi, Michael.
Yes, sir.
David, San Francisco. I actually found Ellen to be quite funny and kind of pertinent. You know, if the Oscars wants to move forward and get more people, younger, 20, 30-year-olds, into the theaters, you can't have Billy Crystal on, 10 years in a row.
No.
Fair point, David. Billy Crystal's much funnier. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, he's not currently doing a show.
No.
But anyway, and Ellen's pizza thing and her selfies is an attempt to kind of lure in the younger crowd, because that's what they're doing. They're eating pizza at home. They're not sitting in multi-$1,000 gowns and tuxedos.
Yeah, but what was that Jimmy Fallon bit with those two people sitting two people sitting in front of the television set looking like, I suppose, some kind of stereotype middle-class schlubs?
It's sort of insulting, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking about insulting, Nick LaSalle.
Yes.
expert.
No. I was a bit insulted by... maybe disturbed would be more, I think, an apt word, by what they did with Kim Novak. I mean, I don't know how you responded, because I know, she's one of those tremendous iconic figures. It wasn't exactly like a Jacqueline Bisset moment in the Golden Globes, but it was almost along those lines.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. There's some kind of problem there. I don't know if there's something wrong with her, or it could be just simply she couldn't read the teleprompter right or something. But she seemed
very addled at best.
She seemed addled and a little bit frail and frighteningly lifted, almost that like her face looked bisected. On the other hand, she's 81 years old, and she's Kim Novak, so why not? And McConaughey seemed nicely protective of her without making too much of a show of being nicely protective.
Yeah, that I thought he handled
gracefully.
She's
a painter now. There was an exhibition of her paintings. There was that San Francisco-centric film. Was it the Mint or something? Do you remember this? You had the folks on the show, I think, to talk about this show, and her paintings were part of it. So maybe that's what she should stick to instead of coming out. She's done a couple of...
still very active in the animal rights world, I think.
Yeah,
she can still use her name.
She's come on to do a couple of, on-stage interviews recently. Yeah. I don't know why she's doing that.
Well, we'll go to more calls. Yeah. We'll go to Half Moon Bay. Julie, hi. You're on.
Hi. I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the show last night. Ellen was a little bit slow and wasn't as funny as Billy Crystal, but I got the impression that they did what they did with Ellen in order to give the winners of the awards more time for their acceptance speeches, and I really appreciated that.
Well, I thank you for that call. We'll get some more of your remarks and your thoughts about the Oscars. That's what we're talking about with Sarah Wood, Mick LaSalle, and Tim Gray. A listener asks about, question of, this is always kind of tender subject to just broach even, but gay and black dominance. I mean, for years they've been talking about Jewish dominance, and now I guess they're talking about gay and black dominance.
Yeah, so if there aren't white people, then everybody else is dominating.
Well, that's kind of an attitude that some might take out of it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. An email from Kiyoshi. I have no idea what the metrics are for acting other than how I perceive the portrayal, but I thought Christian Bale would win and that DiCaprio had no chance, not because he wasn't worthy for Wolf of Wall Street, but because actors like DiCaprio, Paul Newman, etc., never win. Just as comedies do not win, attractive actors don't either.
Well, yeah, I mean, I you know, there's an element of truth to that. I mean, you know, because movie stars, I mean, the public likes movie stars for doing what they do best. And, you know, in the Oscar world, in theory, Sean Connery should have won for playing James Bond, and Humphrey Bogart should have won for playing Sam Spade, or Peter Sellers as Inspector Clouseau. They weren't even nominated. But those are the performances people remember. So I think that's true. But also to go back to Mick's point about gays and blacks, it's like it is, but it's a very safe version of both of those things. I mean, saying slavery is bad and tolerance is good. You think, well, yeah, I mean, who can argue with that? So it's like, you know, if they're dominant, but I really do think the myth of liberal Hollywood is a little exaggerated. It's like, it's kind of like money Hollywood, and if they think something's going to make money, then they'll make a movie about it, and otherwise, they'll just write a check for $1,000 and feel better about themselves.
Well, I was interested in that last email I read about more attractive box office magnates not necessarily getting the nod, because there are some who would say, well, Meryl Streep, for example, has had 18 nominations, therefore it seems less likely that she would win an Oscar, although John Williams, I think, has had 49, but I don't know. Was that? Did you think that performance of hers was Oscar worthy, Mikkelsen?
Oh, in August Osage County.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was.
It was over the top, really.
No, it was beyond over the top. It was horrible. It was absolutely. She destroyed that piece of writing. That's a great play, and she annihilated it. She just did the role incorrectly, and the movie was horribly directed in terms of tone. And I think that probably the actors ran away with it.
I think you said it best when you said they were trying to make Long Day's Journey Tonight instead of a dark comedy. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. That's how they did it. And it's a really funny play. And every time that character, when you see the play, every time that character walks onto the stage, everybody gets happy in the audience, like, okay, something fun is going to happen. Meryl Streep was horrible. She was even bad in the clips that they showed. You know, just to show how great she was even bad in the clips. This was a case, and this is like, I think, the first time she ever ruined a movie, and you think about, you know, great actors like, you know, Olivier, you know, ruined a bunch of movies. I mean, it's great actors ruin movies a lot of times because they make bold choices, so that's fine that she ruined one, but I think there's a little bit of a reactivity when you see it's Meryl Streep. Oh, yeah, well, she must be great. Let's nominate her. I think there's a touch of that.
Did you ever see Olivier do Othello? I still cringe when I think about it.
Yeah, and I've seen, Olivier. I mean, his King Lear wasn't all that great either. And I'll tell you something, his Hamlet, that 1948 Hamlet, doesn't really date very well either.
And, sir, here's a listener who writes, Hustled. How in the world did American Hustle get overlooked for any Academy Awards? The scene between Christian Bale and Jennifer Lawrence after he was nearly killed by the mob, the burlap bag over his head, was absolutely brilliant. Everyone in the theater was on the edge of their seats, and he added 40 pounds for the role.
I loved that film. I think maybe it was just too easy and entertaining, you know, to have enough gravitas for the voters at the Academy, and I'm really sorry it got shut out. I actually probably am in the minority. I really wanted Jennifer Lawrence to win again for that role. I thought she was terrific. It was a better part, and she was even better than in Silver Linings Playbook. I didn't care for that.
But I also think, I mean, partly because the Academy decided years ago to not reveal the results. And as a result, like, so there's 6,000 voting members in the Academy. And so whenever, like, American Hustle gets nothing, you think, my God, no one in Hollywood voted for American Hustle? In truth, I bet it got a lot of votes in every category, but it may have missed, seriously, by one vote in a couple of those categories. But again, you do get the perception that everybody in Hollywood voted for Argo last year, everybody voted for 12 Years, and nobody voted for American Hustle or Wolf of Wall Street or Nebraska. And you think, I bet that's not true.
Is it the ranked voting that's affecting it? Is the ranked voting in every category? I found it a little confusing.
No, it's in the nominations. It's this weird preferential voting system, which I think is used in like two counties in the United States. But it's like the goal is to get every voter's ballot to say something. So it's used in the nominations because when there's more than, you know, if there's two candidates, then it's like, okay, it's pretty straightforward. But if there's more than one candidate and more than one winner, Then they use this preferential system, and they use it in the final bouts just for Best Picture because there's nine, because they don't want the Best Picture winner to get basically like 12% of the votes, which you would do if it's one vote, one ballot. So they do this thing, but I've written about it three times, and I still don't understand it. It's so complicated.
Well, let me give you some more emails that are coming in here. We had talked about Cate Blanchett and Woody Allen, and Jody writes, Cate Blanchett barely thanked Woody Allen. She's probably afraid of being booed. He has been hung up by a mob, no judge or jury. Christina writes, am I the only one who thought Harrison Ford's presentation was rambling and bizarre? No, Sarah did, didn't you?
dull.
And here's Randy who writes, on Friday, my husband and I watched all five nominated live-action short films and both agreed that the best by far was Aquel No Era Yo. So we were shocked that Helium won. The winner was a sweet but unexceptional story about a little boy dying in a hospital. The film that should have won was a tense, shocking, true-life drama about child soldiers dying in some unnamed African country. It was bloody and brutal, but ultimately redemptive. What happened there? Anybody want to comment on that?
No.
All right. I'll read some more comments then from listeners online. Jack says, they're taking us to task. Lighten up. The program was a breath of fresh air, with Ellen making it unpredictable and fun. And Rania says, I've watched the Oscars with four friends, and we all thought Ellen did a good job of directing the focus to the stars themselves rather than to herself. We thought the pizza bit was very humanizing and humorous. Okay, like Mark Twain said, that's what makes horse races. Let me just read a few more here. Robert writes, how wonderful that the Oscar winners were not played off the stage with music before their speech was done. This was a wonderful and welcome change. And a listener writes, Cuaron seemed to know Bullock would not win and graciously gave her lots of props. She was deserving. American Hustle was cotton candy on meth caricatures, short shelf life. Robert writes, is there really, and this is a good question, really a difference between best director and best film categories? Isn't the film the ultimate product of the film's direction? And are these separate categories just for the ego of the director's guild members?
No. No, they're slightly different, and I think that what they were acknowledging with Cuaron winning is that that movie, everything that's good about that movie is the direction, and everything that's good about 12 Years a Slave isn't necessarily the direction. So that's Gravity is like entirely a directorial achievement, and 12 Years a Slave, there's a lot of different things that went into that.
So Tim Gray, here's a listener who says, I was lukewarm on The Descendants and Sideways, but Nebraska, a deceptively simple film, had one of the best performances by Bruce Dern and left me thinking about it for days. Definitely one of my top two from last year, and I saw all the Best Picture nominees. There were a lot of people who felt Nebraska should have been in there somehow.
I love Nebraska. I mean, that movie is a real gem, and I really do believe 20 years from now people will be watching Nebraska, and they'll either think, how could this not win more Oscars, or else they won't even remember how many Oscars it won. It's like we all have our favorite movies, and Singing in the Rain. It's like, how many Oscars was that nominated for? It's like, I can't remember, but you just love it. But yeah, I agree. I love Nebraska. I thought the direction. I said in a column, if you take one film from 2013, put it in a time capsule to show what life in Midwest America was like, I mean, this does it really well.
And another listener, James, writes, it seems to me that many of the nominated movie themes were about a hero or of a heroic nature. It looks as if Hollywood is preparing the movie-going society for some terrible, unkind, too-real future where these character types will be needed or at least more prevalent. And it has been remarked by a number of people, I don't know which of you wants to comment on this, but that the majority of these nine films that were nominated, which is a big number, certainly, judging by past, had to do with real-life stories or were at least based on real-life stories to some degree.
Although I take issue that Wolf of Wall Street's about an American hero.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, this is the trend also. The trend in books is towards memoirs, and so maybe we're just moving away from fiction in some way.
Well, somebody asked about short films. The Oscar-nominated short films are showing at various Landmark theaters around the Bay Area, so visit landmarktheaters.com for more information. And Chris says, easy on the Wizard of Oz tribute. On a show you considered so bland, this was a truly groundbreaking film that continues to have many meanings to many people. And hats off to Whoopi Goldberg for reminding younger viewers that there was a time where you actually had to wait for once a year for a special film.
Well, I mean, I will say, I mean, because I think the four of us on the phone here, we watch Oscar shows and probably watch movies in a different way than most people do. Most people sit there and just want to be entertained, and we're sitting there wanting to be entertained, but also analyzing it. So, I always think, look, if I could change the Oscar show, I would do this, and but if anybody says I liked it, lighten up, I think, yeah, good for you. I get what you're saying. Yeah,
well, and here's some more people weighing in here. Becky writes, I love Kate Blanchett's smart, classy speech, Jared Leto's tribute to his family and concern for his fellow humans, and Bill Murray's shout-out to Harold Ramis and appreciation of Darlene Love, and Lupita Nyong'o's amazing, of course. I just hated Ellen's hosting, starting with the awful June squib bit. And what the heck was that weird Bette Midler performance? Continue to get all kinds of opinions, including this listener says, I'd love to see Jimmy Fallon host. Antoine says, and how much of how you critique these movies are based on how you can relate to the films and the characters? How do you say what is entertaining and what is not based on your taste? I think that is the biggest problems with the award show. It's not representative of moviegoers.
Well, it depends also the day that you see it. I think, to be fair, I think a lot of us who do film reviews, too, we see a film 2 years later. We're in a different place. We have a different view of it. But also in terms of the critiquing of the show and the Oscars, I mean, it's a time of year when never is so much said about so little. I mean, I think we do have to make a concession to that, as much fun as it is to talk about it.
I'm going to read this Facebook comment from Priscilla, who says, I do wish you had a person of color on the panel to counter your discussion of 12 Years a Slave. After all, as someone on the show said, it's all personal taste. I'm a person of color and felt the film did show slavery in a way that has not been shown before in American films. Perhaps it did take a non-American to show the truer side of this horror that we gloss over, unlike we do the horror of the Holocaust, which didn't happen in the U.S. I hardly ever watch the Oscars, but 12 Years a Slave, Gravity, and American Hustle were reasons I decided to watch this time.
Yeah, there's a reason why in the United States we haven't been honest about slavery, and it's because the country didn't break up, it stayed together, and it's kind of like an argument between two spouses where in the end when one wins, the thing to say is, well, you had a point too, and actually I understand what you were saying, and you were right, and I was right, and we were both wrong, and actually it's not true, maybe one person was right. This is how the North has been behaving with the South. So you had a point, you were noble, you know, not like you people were crazy and almost destroyed the country far more than, you know, Adolf Hitler's wildest dreams. You can't say that.
Well, we'll leave it there. I want to thank all of you. And as one of the four film critics here this morning, your genial host, but also a film critic, I gotta say Philomena was the best film of the year that I saw. Thank you all. Tim Gray, Mick LaSalle, Sarah Wood, for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.